During our Bible on Broadway series each year, the focus is never really on the musicals themselves, but rather what the musicals can suggest to us or teach us about our Christian faith. Usually we organize the musicals we bring you around a theme like redemption or outcast or love of friends and family. This year our theme is simply quarantine. And I find myself even less dedicated than usual to telling you the ins and outs of the musical storylines. That's especially true today as we bring you Aladdin. I found the fairy tale suggesting themes to me far beyond the story of a genie in a lamp, quarantined, and a boy coming into possession of the genie's magic lamp and three wishes. I found the legend suggesting themes that are paramount right now, in this moment, as most of the world continues in quarantine at different levels. I ask you to bear with me as I use the story of Aladdin as a springboard to explore another story, a story that is perhaps better known than the story of Aladdin. But I'll get to that in a moment. First, a quick glimpse at Aladdin, the musical, based on the 1992 Disney animated film by the same name. The musical has a book by Chad Begelin, music by Alan Menken, and lyrics by Howard Ashman, Tim Rice, and Chad Begelin. Set in the fictional Arab city of Agrabah, the story follows the familiar tale of a poor young man who is granted three wishes by a genie in a lamp, which he uses to woo a princess and to thwart the Sultan's evil grand vizier. Let's get right to that genie and all the things it is within his power to offer Aladdin.
Oh my. Oh, back up. Watch out now. You done wound me up. I'm about to show you what I can do. Well, Alibaba had them 40 thieves. Scheherazade had 1,000 tails. Well, Master, you're in luck, cause up your sleeve, you got a brand of magic never fails. You got some power in your corner now, some heavy ammunition in your camp. See, all you gotta do is punch pizzazz, yahoo, and how. See, all you gotta do is rub that lip, and I'll say, Mr. A, what's your name? Whatever, what will your pleasure be? Let me take your order, jot it down. You ain't never had a friend like me. A life is your restaurant, and I'm your maitre d'. Come whisper what it is you want. You ain't never had a friend like me. We pride ourselves on service. You're the boss, the king, the Shah. Say what you wish, it's yours, true dish. How about a little more baklava? Have some of column A, try all of column B. I'm in the mood to help you, dude. You ain't never had a friend like me. Yes, I'm the genie of the lamp. I can sing, rap, dance if you give me a chance. Oh, Mr. Aladdin, yes, what wish, you're two or three? I'm on the job, you big nabob. You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend like me. You ain't never had a friend like me.
Let me hold up a few of the genie's words from the Broadway musical. You got a brand of magic, never fails. You got some power in your corner now, some heavy ammunition in your camp. You got a brand of magic that never fails. You got some power in your corner now, some heavy ammunition in your camp. Wow. Don't we all need a friend like that? But here's what I've got to make sure we all understand this morning. Sometimes we Christians believe not only that we need a friend like that, but also that we have a friend like that, a friend in Jesus, a friend in God. like that. Sometimes we think, probably unconsciously or subconsciously, that believing in God is like having a friend like the genie. Oh, it's not that big. We don't necessarily think in terms of magic that never fails or power in our corner or even heavy ammunition, but sometimes we think, my faith will protect me. And we see people gathering in churches in groups of 50 and 200 and choirs of 100 without masks. But God will protect us like the genie in the lamp. Sometimes I fall into it myself. This morning I really needed the magical God who would make sure that the office printer did not flash a user error warning as I tried to print my sermon this morning. Really, God? I'm trying to manage a pandemic here. I'm trying to hold a congregation together. I'm working on my sermon. Surely the printer should work. Can I have the tiniest bit of help right now, God? But that is not how the power of God works. The power of God is greater. The power of God is bigger. The power of God is less magical and more miraculous than that. The power of God is love. And the love of God is like this. This story is told to us in the Gospel of Luke in the 15th chapter. Then Jesus said, there was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me. So the father divided his property between his two sons. And a few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country. And there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare, but here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. So he set off and went to his father, but while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. The father ran and put his arms around the boy and kissed him. Then the son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven. I've sinned against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father called to the people, quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him, and put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they all began to celebrate. God's love is like this. It's not protection from disease. It's not about financial wealth. It's not favor in sports contests, not victory in battle, but unconditional, unearned love. This morning, had that printer magically worked, I wouldn't have taken a moment to slow down, to pray not for the copier to work, but for calm and the peace that passes understanding. And God would not have shown up for me in a friend's help, in another's love and encouragement, in a reminder of what's important, and the assurance that God is with me. That's what God's love is like. More miraculous than magic. More certain than a genie. Now, I'd be remiss this morning if I didn't mention the love story in Aladdin. The story between a poor orphaned boy of the streets who tries to be good, but often must resort to stealing to stay alive, and a princess who has every material good in her possession, but longs for love and freedom. Let's meet Aladdin.
Proud of your boy, I'll make you proud of your boy. Believe me, bad as I've been, Ma, you're in for a pleasant surprise. I've wasted time, I've wasted me. So say I'm slow for my age, a late bloomer, okay, I agree. That I've been one rotten kid, some sun, some pride, and some joy. But I'll get over these lousing up, messing up, screwing up times. You'll see, Ma, now comes the better part. Someone's gonna make good cross his stupid heart, make good and finally make you proud of your boy. Tell me that I've been a louse and a loafer, you won't get a fight here, no ma'am. Say I'm a gold brick, a goof off, no good, but that couldn't be all that I am. Water flows under the bridge, let it pass, let it flow. There's no good reason that you should believe me, not yet. I know, but someday and soon, I'll make you proud of your boy. Though I can't make myself taller or smarter or handsome or wise, I'll do my best. What else can I do, since I wasn't born perfect like Dad or you? Mom, I will try hard to make you proud of your boy.
And Jasmine, the princess.
Suitors talk of love, but it's an act merely meant to throw me. How can someone love me when in fact they don't know me? They want my royal treasure. When all is said and done, it's time for a desperate measure. So I wonder, why shouldn't I fly so far? I know the girl I might become here, sad and confined and always locked behind these palace walls. Show devotion every day and not second guess it. If a new emotion comes my way, you suppress. is.
What would be your suggestion?
Stand on your own two feet and ask why a certain question keeps repeating.
Why shouldn't I fly so far from here? I know the girl I might become here. Something awaits beyond these palace walls.
Here's what I want to say again. These two, Aladdin and Jasmine, would never have met if not for the fact that Princess Jasmine met Aladdin while she was out on the streets pretending to be a poor peasant girl. Their different social standings would have kept them apart. And that's the part of the story that stuck with me throughout this week. This great love story almost never happened because of the social distancing, the social separation, the caste systems, both formal and informal, that exist in our world. That is particularly evident during this pandemic. And it's what I want to spend the rest of my time on this morning. But first, I've been using all week in our For the Love of God and Neighbors campaign a quote from Diana Butler Bass. This is what she says. I'm so weary of the call-out culture. We need a call-forth culture instead. Calling forth the best in people, calling forth compassion, gratitude, empathy, calling forth justice, calling forth beauty, goodness, wonder, calling forth courage. From that starting point, I want to talk about something this morning that is on a lot of people's minds. I want to talk about the opening of school. I've been so worried as we get closer. I have one child still in school, two others who are teachers, three grandchildren in daycare within a public school setting. So I want to talk about schools opening, in some cases not opening, in other cases opening on a hybrid model, in other cases opening in person, in other cases opening only online, Mondays and Wednesdays, or Tuesdays and Thursdays, or some other system. It's all very confusing. I want to talk about it. Not because I can make sense of it, but because I think, because of some of the things that I think are below the surface in our anxiety about opening schools. An educator wrote an article about some things that she sees happening as schools consider how they will begin this year. Her post went viral. And here's what the subject of her post is. The subject of her post are schools that are being organized outside of the public schools. They're calling them pods, pandemic pods, education pods. And what's happening is that in many areas, people, parents, are pulling together to create these pandemic pods. In some cases, folks are pulling their kids from public schools and they're organizing in these pods. They're finding private tutors. They're paying those people. They're creating socially safe bubbles of 10 families or maybe fewer. It's a logical and reasonable response to our fears about sending our kids back to school. I'd like to talk about those pandemic pods for a moment and some of the questions that this author has raised about them. But before I do that, I want to go back where I started with Diana Butler Bass's quote, "We need a call forth culture and not a calling out culture." And what I'm about to talk about is in no way an attempt to call out anyone. I applaud the creativity and the care and the love and the parenting that are behind creating these education pods. And I share some questions with the author of the viral post, and I would like for us to talk about that for a moment. She asks these questions: who is present in these spaces that are being created, and who is missing? Who benefits from what is being created, and who is excluded? What does this do to elevate our understanding of anti-racism and the need for integration and equality in public schools? What narratives do pods reinforce about public education? What is the history of families with asset wealth and social privilege pooling resources? In this time of crisis, how do these actions support families with the greatest needs? Families struggling with food insecurity, housing insecurity, single parents. Let me say again, I'm a fan of the creativity and the care and the love and the problem solving that has gone into creating this. And I encourage us all to ask, who's left out? And I want us to reach out to them. Jasmine and Aladdin never would have met. Their social strata kept them separated. In this time of pandemic, let's find ways to pull together, to support one another, rather than to separate further. If you have the means and the resources and you're organizing your friends to put together a pandemic pod to educate your children, I pray blessings upon you. That's wonderful. And I also invite you to consider who's not there. Are there a couple of kids? Is there a family or two that you could invite into your school, into your pandemic pod? Somebody who doesn't have the resources maybe to help make it happen? Can you reach out in other ways too beyond that? To not assume that the kids are safe at home and everybody's well, but also create some systems where you're checking in with each other. How's your mental health? Who needs a kind word? Who needs encouragement? Who needs maybe a professional to talk to? Encourage each other beyond just the specifics of the school. I encourage those of you who aren't involved in those kinds of efforts, but who have time or resources or interest in supporting the public schools in other ways, reach out to your community and schools coordinators. Offer yourself as a volunteer in some way. If you don't feel like you have skills that can be used as kids go back to school online or in what other ways, then maybe what you can do is check on your neighbors. Is there a kid that you're used to seeing playing out in the yard, used to seeing toys out in the yard, and you don't see that child playing anymore? You don't see toys, you don't see evidence of a child that's safe and happy. Check on those children. Remember that kids still need to eat, and some of them depend on school lunches, so make sure that you're keeping our brown bag project going and bringing the food for those kids. I've heard school officials interviewed on news programs this week. Many of them, doctors, PhDs, doctorates in education, school board members, near tears, because the decisions they're trying to make for their students are so difficult. If you're a letter writer, send them an email. Find out who the local decision makers are in your school district. Support them as they make hard decisions. Let them know that you trust them to have the best interest of students and teachers and all of us at heart. Bake some cookies, send some flowers. We need everything we can get during this time. Friends, what we need is a call forth culture, not a call out culture. And we have an amazing example for that. And it comes from Jesus.
Softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling, calling for you and for me. Patiently, Jesus is waiting and watching, watching for you and for me. Come home, come home. All who are weary, come home.